Welcome back to Don't Turpins with Travis Garrison. Got my big brother, Rodney Elliott, with me today. I appreciate you taking time out your day, man, and joining me to talk some Vernon basketball, to catch up with you, man. How's everything going?
Already, man. Thanks for having me, man. All is well, man. No complaints on my end.
Man, that's good. That's good, man. Like I said, man, I definitely appreciate you, you know, taking time out your day to join me. I know a lot of people want to see what's going on with Big Rod these days. So, you know, I had to have you come on, man. And, you know, I want to catch up with you. It's been a while since we caught up, especially since this COVID thing. I think the last time I saw you was at the homecoming. That was like 2 years ago, bro.
Yeah, it was a while. I want to say homecoming and, or was it, I think the team that won the ACC tournament, you were on that team, right? I think y'all had something at one of the last Maryland games.
We did. That was right before COVID when they shut everything down. Okay. Like, that was right before.
Yeah.
So how's everything going with you, man?
Like I said, man, all is well, man. You know, today was supposed to be my first day back in the office from working, but I had to take care of something here at home. But, you know, with everything that's been going on, you know, COVID last year, everything. So, you know, all is well on my end. All is well.
Man, that's a blessing right there, man. Like you said, man, so much been going on, you know, just a light period. Kind of everybody kind of had to adjust to the new norm, we should say, the new norm, man. But, you know, glad everything is good on your end. You know, the family's good, man. You know, I see you living life. You know, that's a great thing, man. Hey, there's nothing like it, man. Especially these days, man. You gotta live. Life is short, man. You gotta live like when you can, you know.
I tell you what, the 2020 ain't told us or ain't shown us in some form of fashion, man. Like, you know, life is short, and that, you know, you gotta live it. You gotta laugh. You gotta love it. You know, that's what it's all about. At this particular point, you know, take care of what you gotta take care of, your responsibilities, but get out there, man, and try something new, or, you know, do something that you know, always wanted to do, check something off your bucket list, you know, tap back in with a family member or a friend that you haven't in a long time, you know, start that job, or take that, you know, be an entrepreneur, or quite honest, if you want to chill and relax too, do that as well too. Take some time out for yourself, man. It's truly important.
And I tell people all the time, man, you got to enjoy life. You know, like you said, life is short. Especially like since this last year, 2020, man, like you said, with the shoulders, man, this life is so precious. We don't know what tomorrow holds, and just got to appreciate life. That's what I've been doing, man. I've been, you know, obviously appreciating my kids, man, spending time with them, even though they growing up, man. So they kind of coming to their own, you know, they all over the place, but it's just appreciating those moments that we have with our kids, man, our family and our loved ones, like you said.
Yeah, for sure. Good stuff.
Yeah, so have you been keeping up with the team this past year?
I had. Yeah. You know, obviously, you know, couldn't go to no games because of COVID, but definitely been tuning in, watching those guys, and you know, solid year, you know, but you know, came up a little short, you know, when it counted. I recently did a couple guys come back. I know some guys put their name in the hat a little bit and was, you know, testing the waters, but you know, everything, you got the transfer portal, guys. I really ain't wrapped my head around or understand totally what last year was about as far as guys, quote unquote, having an extra year or what that really means. But, you know, I have been keeping a small tab on what they've been doing.
Yeah, man. And definitely like what you were saying in regards to, I guess what they're saying is basically because they last year counted, but they like, if you want to come back, you have that option too. You'll be eligible to still play that extra year.
Right.
I mean, I think that's a really good thing, especially if you didn't have a solid year, as good as years you didn't want to have, or you want to keep the team together and go for that run again. Cause like you said, man, they were solid. They fell short, but they had a really good team, man. They missed a couple of pieces, but like you said, they just that those transfers, you know, especially from Georgetown. What do you think about that? That whole transfer, you know, Georgetown to Maryland thing, man. Then you got the guys coming from Georgetown to Maryland. What do you think about that, man?
You know, I know a lot of guys in the coaching realm. I used to coach a little bit in AAU. So a lot of guys that I played with, that we played with, are in that coaching atmosphere, particularly in college. And you just never know, man. Each year, I read somewhere where the portal is something like, I don't know, 400 or 500 kids entered the portal. I read somewhere where it's like 300 and something guys into the NBA draft, only knowing it's 60 spots and 30 guaranteed. And now we talk about crosstown rivals. We always thought that, you know, back when we played, you know, Georgetown and we only got together in the summertime when it's our opportunity for us to get some, you know, some pickup in.
Right, right.
You know, if I picked Maryland, I wasn't going to Georgetown. Or if right. someone picked Georgetown, they technically wasn't going to Maryland.
Right.
But times are changing now. You know, I look at it like this too. You know, for each kid, each kid that makes the decision, hopefully they're making something that's best for them.
Right.
Especially themselves, you know. Nowadays, they got a lot of information out there that they can go out and do their own research. A lot of people they can tap into to see if that decision, you know, makes sense for them. That's what it's all about. You got to do something that's going to make sense for you.
Absolutely. And I definitely agree with that, man. You know, that's my thing. When I talk to kids, I say, don't do nothing for anybody else because you got to, you're the one that got to go to that school. You got to play for that coach. You got to, you know, you got to deal with that on a daily basis. These guys, these individuals, they don't. So like you said, just making a decision for yourself. But I don't think kids sometimes get the best advice, you know, or the some of the, sometimes the AAU coaches, some guys may have an ulterior motive behind it, you know, so
that,
it's tough,
that,
man.
That is still around. That's one thing that hasn't changed. You know, back when we was coming up, the AAU guys, the runners, you know, AAU did play a lot of, play a big role in, as far as recruitment too. So when you think about it, if you're a young kid in high school and, you know, you play for a certain AAU program and you have some success there and you got to the school you wanted, right?
Right.
Now you're in that school and I'm pretty sure whoever helped you along that way to make the decision, they're still a resource to you, hopefully. Mm-hmm. So if they're still a resource to you, hopefully, when you're tapping into them, you're pretty sure them questions are coming up like, hey, man, look, you know, I know we decided to come here a couple of years ago, but boom, I'm not happy.
Right.
Depending on what school or what AAU program that resource could be affiliated to, that's when the jankiness could come into play.
Right.
But, you know, a lot of guys I know, man, you know, coming around, they do have a lot of solid interest in that kid and give them the flat out honest truth. That's the best thing you can do for these kids nowadays. Keep it 100 with it, keeping a buck with it.
Right.
100.
And that's, like you said, that's rare. I know when I was coming up, man, you had the AAU coaches bringing the shoes and gear and all this stuff. I know for me, man, you know, you got them new Nikes coming out, man. I'm going to get the new phone poses, the phone pauses. You know, you got the Garnets coming out, man. You know, you're trying to look fresh. So, you know, the kids, it's enticing to the kids, man. But like you said, man, a lot of these kids, sometimes they have the right guidance and sometimes they don't, you know. And then like they say with this transfer portal, I'm trying to understand it. Like we didn't have that when I mean, if you want to transfer, you can transfer, but then you got to sit out of here. It's a whole process. Whereas now they're like, up, I ain't happy. I'm gonna go ahead and go here. Like basketball is totally changed. Like, could you imagine, man, playing right now with the COVID situation with no fans, especially at Maryland when y'all was there?
Yeah.
You know, could you imagine like playing up? And I talked to a couple of guys that played on the team this year. And just stuck in the house, stuck in their rooms, couldn't really leave, you know, the social distance, like isolated. You know, I mean, you know what we go through on a daily basis, just practicing and playing anyway with that. And then now you can't really socialize. Like me, myself, man, knowing what I experienced when I was at Murder and that atmosphere, and then you basically had to turn it off and it's totally different. Like, could you imagine that?
Take the things away that you just mentioned, the social aspect of going to college. You know, a lot of times for the coach that we played for, we needed a relief to kind of get away from the court, so to speak. So
right.
We weren't in practice or weren't in games or, you know, weren't working out or watching video. You know, that walk down to the root was great, you know,
right.
Or that drive to D.C. or for me, Baltimore, that drive to Baltimore, my favorite restaurant, was awesome. You know, Cole Fieldhouse was awesome, fantastic. You know, they were quote unquote out six man. A lot of people say in Seattle, as far as football is concerned, with the Seahawks, they're known as the, you know, 12th man, so to speak. And Cole Fieldhouse, when we rock and roll and that 55 press is going and we hit a couple of shots, oh man, it's fantastic. I know a lot of guys we played against, they said that, you know, a lot of times they couldn't hear what their coach was saying in the huddle because our fans were so loud. So to take all those things away, you had to find a way to get yourself going,
right,
to, you know, get yourself ready and motivated for the game. That doesn't necessarily mean, you know, you necessarily need the fans, but that's what you've been used to. That's what you, you know, kind of been accustomed to not right. have that. It's challenging. It's challenging.
Right.
You know, on top of that, like you said, to not be able to do to socially engage, so to speak. That's challenging as well. But kudos to the team because I think they were one of, university that didn't have an incident as far as, you know, I forgot
COVID.
The terminology, what it's called, but like they didn't break COVID protocol.
Right.
You
right
know, they didn't
right.
have to sit a player or cancel the game or, you know, even administration. So, you know, they did a great job of handling that and, you know, working with what they had.
Right. And like you said, man, it's just like you said, take it around that. That's what a lot of kids go to college for, that social, yeah, that environment, especially at Maryland, man, you know, it's different. And quick, so what made you choose Maryland? I know you're from Baltimore, you're from BMO, yep. And you had a number of guys, Keith Booth from Baltimore. You know, you had guys that was from Maryland that end up, Terrell Stokes from me, Terrell Stokes from Baltimore too.
Terrell Stokes from Philly.
Philly.
Stokes came a year after me.
Okay.
Keith Booth was a year before me.
Right.
But why I chose Maryland, man, I'm a Baltimore guy, true and true. Born and raised here in Baltimore, at the Dunbar High School. I'm a Maryland, Baltimore guy. Was I a Maryland fan at Dunbar, to be quite honest? Not until Keith Booth got there. Keith Booth was my guy. You know, we hung out a lot in school, and when he decided to go to Maryland, I definitely tagged along down there, you know, went to a bunch of games, hung out with him in the preseason or, you know, even offseason, stuff like that. And I kind of was, you know, I liked the fact that, hey, right down the street, good university, you know, you know, they won a lot the year before that. They made that big run. I don't know if you remember the year before that. My freshman year at Dunbar was Joe Smith's sophomore year. So the year before that, that's when they had that big win against Georgetown at the beginning of the season. With Joe Smith. Mm-hmm. That's when they challenged the Fab Five. I think maybe Chris Webber might have been gone, so it might have been like the Fab Three or something like that. So
right.
They played against Michigan back in the day. I always wanted to be close to home. I wanted my family and friends to be able to still come to my games. They supported me a lot in those younger days, AAU. They supported me a lot in my high school years at Dunbar. I was a two-sport athlete at Dunbar, so whether it's a football game or a basketball game, I could look up in the stands and I'd see mom, dad, brother, you know, neighborhood friends. So
right.
I wanted that to carry on at Maryland. I got recruited by a bunch of other schools as far as Midwest. I got recruited by Missouri, you know, down south, Clemson, North Rhode Island, all great schools, all great universities.
Right.
But
right.
Again, I wanted my mom to have the opportunity to get in the car and drive 45 minutes down the road and come check me out.
Absolutely, man. And pretty much the same for me, you know, like the other schools. But then my mom thing was, look, she ain't trying to get on the plane all the time. And she definitely ain't going to drive no 15, 10, 13 hours. So she like, man, you know, so like you said, just to be able to stay home, play for a hometown school, you know what it's doing. You know what it's doing.
I got another story for you too, Trav. Back then, they didn't have GPS. They didn't have go online and Google and figure out how far my stuff is.
Right.
My dad was a truck driver, so my dad had tons of maps laying around the house and you know, laying in his car and his truck and stuff like that. So I went in his got the phone with the coach of Missouri, and they wanted me to actually come out there and play football and, you know, do both, play football and basketball. And I looked on the map, and I took my finger and, you know, did like this, okay, boom. On the map, they had like an inch was so-and-so amount of miles.
Right.
How many inches is Maryland away from Missouri? I said, right. Ain't no way in the world. Get over there. Ain't no way in the world. So those schools, you know, I love the recruitment process. But again, like you mentioned this earlier, so you from this area, wanting your mom, your family to be there. Mm-hmm. That was definitely the major key for me.
Yeah, and definitely, like I said, man, we know what it's doing for us now after life after Maryland. You know what it's doing for now, how the alumni, you know, taps in, and you know how we try to help each other. And then, like you said, just being from Maryland and playing at Maryland, you know what I mean, it's, you know, the network is different. You know what I mean, the relationships are different. You know, so that's definitely a plus for sure. So what was your experience like, man? I know y'all had a mob. Y'all had a mob, man. But like playing for G Dub back then when he was younger, he was fiery when I was there. So I could just imagine when he was younger, you know, back then, like how was that, man? Like how was those practices and, you know, just how was that whole experience for you, man? Like, you know, coming from high school, then you finally get on campus and you get to experience, you know, G Dub at his finest, you know?
I'm gonna tell you that, man. I lived in East Baltimore and recruited by Maryland, home visit set up, and Billy Hahn and G Dub came to my house. From the east side of Baltimore, people know where Dunbar is. It's located, it's right in the center of a couple projects in Baltimore. And I live right across the street in one of those projects. They came in and G Dub pitched the story, Billy Hahn pitched the story. By that time, I had kind of met them at Maryland because I was coming down there with Keith. Dub and Billy Hahn came to a couple of my games. I want to say they even came to a couple of my football games. So they, really put the bid in for me. I was already set in my mind knowing I was going. I just was going along with the process. So first practice, I realized that, okay, these two crazy dudes are a lot different than when they pitched and pitched the whole come to Maryland and talk to me. So as fiery as G Dub was when you were there, add about 10 to that when I was there. Like I said earlier, my freshman year was Joe Smith's sophomore year, 94. My senior year was Juan Dixon's redshirt year. And I tell people all the time, I had the best seat in the house because I got to practice, compete with, and play against the number one draft pick in Joe Smith every day my freshman year. Practice again with Keith Booth every day. Compete with those big guys. And we had a pretty good run. Went to the Sweet 16 that year. Best seat in the house because at Carolina, you had the, Rasheed Wallace's and Greg Stackhouse and Jeff McGinnis. Clemson, I mean, at Georgia Tech, you had Travis Best and all those guys. So, Tim Duncan and Randolph Childress at Wake Forest. Again, like I said, best seat in the house. And G Dub was fired up and ready to go for each of those contests. He was crazy in a good way, though. He's a Hall of Famer, as we all know right now, because he was really dedicated to his craft.
And definitely, man, like I tell people all the time, like, man, people ask me all the time, man, about my two coaches, my high school coach and G Dub. Like, man, how's it playing for Coach Williams, man? I'm like, man, look, if you don't know him, you might have a perception about him because he off the court, he's quiet. If you don't know you, he ain't gonna have too much conversation for you.
Very true.
But we need with us, he jokes around and people don't see that side of him. He jokes around, he laughs, makes jokes. He's a little, he has that conversation going.
I played for a bunch of high school coaches and AU coaches that were kind of similar to him. So even though, like I say he was crazy in a good way, I saw that crazy before. I've been yelled at, I've been pushed as far as, getting the best out of me on the basketball court and off the basketball court. So I've seen that before. It just was a lot more intense at the collegiate level because it is the next level. Coming from Dunbar to Maryland, I was the big fish in a small pond. As a freshman coming into Maryland, that's a big university. Whole field house sit 12, 13, 14,000. I'm a freshman on a highly ranked basketball team. So now I'm a little fish back in the huge pond. So I gotta make my way. So even as crazy as he was and intense as the practice was and as direct as he was and trying to get the best out of you, I always had back in my mind that, okay, I've been through this before. I know he's trying to get the best out of me. And to be quite honest, I wanted to get better. I wanted to be better. So you hit the nail on the head. If you didn't know him, you would think he was, crazy, mean, or didn't care for you, things of that nature. No, it just he had a different, unique style that was, peculiar.
Very, very, man. Like he's super passionate about the game. He loves the game. He loves the game. And if you don't meet his intensity, then he has a problem with that. You know what I mean? If you don't meet, you ain't getting hyped. Either you score a bucket or you go. He, I mean, that's where he lived off. Because he can't get on the court no more. He had that. He wanted you to see. He wanted that same passion from you. So, yeah, man. So what was some of your best moments at Maryland? Like, what was some of the like, man? You know what? I would never forget this. Or like, what was some, give me a couple of stories. What was some of your best moments? Whether it's at practice or whether it's at in the game or. Some of the best experience that you had, man.
Oh man, tons. Like you said, my freshman year again, best seat in the house. I watched, meaning literally on the bench, watched some of the best basketball ever with in the ACC. Back then we were in ACC back then. So even when you were
yeah, I played that all 4 years.
So the Duke matchup was great. The Carolina matchup was great. one particular time in practice early on when I said, okay, yeah, G-Dub is kind of crazy, kind of nuts. We weren't necessarily, you know, giving it out all that day, and he kicked us all out. I'm like, okay, he kicked us out of practice. Maybe that means practice over with. Like, like we done. Like, we can, you know, go get it early, go back home, get mad.
Right.
So I come in, take my shoes off, take my shirt off, and, you know, and take cutting the tape. And like, young fella, hold tight. I said, what? Practice over with. He kicked us out.
Right.
I see him tomorrow.
Right.
Sure enough. 5 minutes later, he came in there and he tore a hole in us verbally, I would say. Yeah. You guys aren't going hard enough. You know, you guys don't want it. And da da da, this and that. I said, you know what? Maybe practice is not over with. And sure enough, it wasn't over. So we had to go back out on the court. We did a couple suicides, you know, ran a couple 17s and then got back to going. So that was one of the moments where I said, okay, yeah, here is different at a crazy intense level. That year also, we had the opportunity to travel to Hawaii. Went to the Maui Classic down there. You know, when you get an opportunity, man, East kid from east side of Baltimore, you know, the furthest I went in high school might have been a 15-passenger ride down to Tennessee for AAU. A couple rides up north to New York, Pennsylvania to play AAU.
Right.
I did get on a plane ride before that in high school, but having the opportunity to travel and see the world was awesome, you know, and it started right there at Maryland too. So those stories that we had, you know, the bus rides, the plane rides, the, you know, chilling in the hotel game before, those things like that, you'll just never forget.
Right.
And you mentioned earlier about the alumni and the love that the university has for you down there. You know, we got a lot of support at Maryland, so it felt good when you do walk down the route and people show you love and,
right,
you know, things of that nature. So
yeah, absolutely, man. And I definitely remember going back to getting kicked out of practice. We got kicked out of practice a number of times, man. And we went in there and we sat down. I think the first time, I think like you said, when we go in there, I'm like, oh, bad practice over, bad. That bad. Then they come in there, you know, the assistant coming there, or he'll start like Dave, I think it was Dave Dickens here coming there, like kind of get on us and stuff, like, you know, try to fire us up. Or, you know, we had some guys in the locker room, like, man, come on, man, we can't be out here messing around, man. Let's go back out there and work. And then G Dub, I don't think he ever came back there. I think Dave, Coach Dickinson used to come back and get us to go back onto the floor. I don't think we ever got that. G-Dub bursting up in the locker room. Yeah.
I think one thing it also showed me now to look back on, it's a good question you asked, is that that's when I saw what true leadership meant, like, or, you know, understood different styles of leadership. Gary kicked us out. Assistant coaches came in, tried to get out, light a fire underneath of us. And then before we went out, we had one of our seniors kind of say, hey, guys, come on, listen. Y'all know we was kind of, you know, beating a little bit.
Right.
Like, you know, let's get it going a little bit.
Right.
So, you know, that showed us that, again, he was definitely passionate about this sport. He wanted you to match his intensity and even go a little bit higher than that. And then after that, we saw that our teammates, our homeboys, you know, our colleagues, so to speak, on the basketball
court,
they showed us how to lead. And that helped me out early, because my senior year got kicked out again. You know, so we had to figure out a way to get things going.
Right. I know you said you played with Juan too. Well, he was red shirt that year. Could you see how special he's from Baltimore kid too?
Yeah.
Could you see how special he was going to be at that younger age, or it was like a development, like, or could you see it that early on, or was it just over time playing with you guys and seeing how you guys did things and kind of just, you know, caught on? Or
if people would have asked me back then, you know, my senior year, Juan did the freshman year, if I would have could bet that he would be the number one scorer in University of Maryland history, I would have said, oh, hell no, I'll take that bet for sure. I'm going to run a kid and go, but I'm going to, you know, get 2,000-something points.
Right.
But I followed the story, obviously, because I'm a Baltimore guy. I knew that he was coming. So I thought he had a great high school career. I put some solid numbers up. I knew where he came from. I know his older brother, Phil Dixon. I knew him as well. He's a little older than me, but we competed a lot here in Baltimore. So I knew he came from good pedigree. But the minute he got on the court, he couldn't play that year. It was a redshirt year. He was practicing. So he was always the guy that was a scout team. So we played Georgia Tech with Stephon Marbury.
Right.
Juwan Dixon in practice with Steph Marbury. Mm-hmm. So we had the green light to go. And he would light us up.
Right.
So you knew, I knew that he could play. Even though he was, I don't know, bucking some chains as far as how much he weighed, but he was gritty. All the things that he showed at university, I saw a glimpse of it early on. What I did know is he was a hard worker. He was one of those guys that, you know, the whole thing, first one to practice, last one to leave.
Right.
They had a small gym at Cofield's back then. He would get the key, and he had a manager come over and, you know, rebound for him.
Right.
I knew that he had some toughness in him. I knew that he had a desire to get better. And it just so happened it manifested it for him in a great way at University of Maryland, which obviously gave us the help us get the national championship.
Right. Yeah, I used to go up there, man, and watch them play pickup. And he always, the lights cut off. He's still in the gym shooting. So I saw that. He did it every time. It wasn't like he did it every time, man.
That's the thing about it. It was consistent with him. You know, okay, coach said go with smash your shots up. You got a couple guys just going to go just because he said it. But he went even though it wasn't said. Mm-hmm. And he sought out ways to kind of get better even though it was after practice time or it was after – or it was on, quote-unquote, our off days.
You know? Right.
And as a senior out there working out on our off day, to see a freshman out there working out on your off day, yeah, you knew that, you know, this guy was going to be something special.
Right. So let me ask you a question. New gym or old gym? Cofield or I still call it Comcast. Yeah, I still call it Comcast. So Cofield or Comcast? I mean, I played in Cofield when I was in high school. Okay. I never played in that atmosphere you guys played in.
Right.
In regards to, I've been to those games where the gym is sold out and it's super hot in there. I used to go in there with sweat clothes on. I'm taking all my clothes off because it's so hot and the crowd just greatly on top of you, man. It just, and I was at a Duke game, the crowd was crazy. And then you got Comcast too, which is a lot more, it's bigger, you know, the whole more. But I know for me, like in my high school, we have our old gym, we have our new gym. They say, which one you prefer? I said, the old gym, because it's much smaller. It's like, it's old school. It's like what I'm used to. You know what I mean? The new gym is good. It's nice. Got, you know, bigger arena and got all these luxuries around it. Right. I kind of like that small just hot box, you know. And I'm curious to hear what you would have preferred.
It's funny you mentioned. I get that question all the time in my group text. I got a bunch of guys, you know, NBA playoffs starting now, so we got a group text with my guys from Baltimore. They always ask me questions about Maryland. We actually get together on Thursday over Buddy House to kind of sit outside, watch the game, and I get Maryland questions all the time. Got two comparisons of that as a player. Cofield House for sure, because when people come in there, they know that they got to prepare not only for us, but they got to prepare for our crowd because they are going to be in it.
Right.
They feed off of our energy and vice versa, we feed off of their energy. Mm. As a person who want to come watch a game, I love Xfinity. It's designer. It's, you know, it's bigger. It's they got the box suite. You know, they got all the space and everything. You got the big old screen up top. So
right.
There's no bad seats, so to speak, in Xfinity. And to keep it 100, it's like these jeans nowadays these guys wear. You know, Xfinity like these skinny jeans these guys wear. It's more designer, it's more sleek and all that other kind of stuff. It's cool and everything, but I ain't gonna wear no skinny jeans. I'm gonna wear some nice paper joints.
Right.
Cofield House is like them nice little baggy joints. You know what I mean?
The Jordan be wearing them all them old school, the old school baggy jeans. Jordan still wearing, man. Yeah. Jordan's not conforming from that.
And you know, you guys had some great runs, some great games. The intensity was great, in Xfinity Center. But and I know for me, like I knew that if we go out there. Especially as I got older, as a senior, junior, senior, I said, God, look, we got to come out and be ready to go right away. We got to get our guys into it too, get the fans into it because 55 pressure, we want to get to 55 so we can go and get that thing sped up a little bit.
Right.
Get speeding up and pressing and getting steals and getting alley-oop dunks and stuff like that. The crowd go crazy. That helps us a lot. So both were great, but for different reasons, I would definitely prefer Cofield House as a player.
Yeah, I wish I would have, like I said, I wish I would have played because my freshman year was when they closed Cofield and opened up Xfinity Center. So
gotcha.
it was good to be the first be on the first team that the opened up the arena.
But it'd have been
dope to be like a Drew Nicholas, where his last year he closed out Cold Field, but then opened it up Xfinity Center night and stayed with Steve Blake and Taj and those guys. Like, they played in both. They had the best of both worlds.
Yep.
They won a national championship in here, and they also opened up the arena. I'm like, dang, man. It'd have been dope, man, to have both of those experiences. But, you know, for me, man, Xfinity Center was great. You know, especially like we played against games like against Duke, and the whole arena's full, man, and just that whole experience.
I used to like, you know, the big games, you know, we had coming up in Duke, Carolina, whatever it is, nationally great games. And we would literally go up there the day before and see them camping out like that. I'm like, wow, these guys are really passionate camping. About number 1 year, we actually bought some pizza out there, which is really, really cool. And they love that. And, you know, you get there a little early before the game. And we got there early for the game against Carolina. I loved it because the whole student section was already in the gym 2 hours before the game started. And that was kind of dope. That was kind of
dope. And that was a great experience, just thinking back on those things. Unless people ask me questions like, you know, how was this or how was that? So I never really thought about some things, but like you said, man, you know, those big games, you walk out on the floor, you know, you go out to get some shots up before the meetings, and the arena's just full, man. And the fans are saying stuff to you, getting you hyped. So you're like, yo, it's the end of the game crew, like the little, the commentators already on the floor, like the big game, like, oh, it's about to be on and popping in here, man. It's like the ESPN games, CBS games, man. So definitely a great experience at Maryland all through and through. So once you left Maryland, you go pro. So how was that experience? And like, what was that like for you? Like, what was the first country you played at?
First year, left in 98, was actually with the NBA first lockout year. So, you know, at that particular point, I had a great talk with my agent, and, you know, I was kind of one of those on the fence kind of guys.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided to take my talent, so to speak, overseas in Europe.
Right.
I played in Belgium. It was my very first year. I played in Belgium my first year, and my last year playing ball was in Buenos Aires, Argentina. So in between that, about 13 years or so I played in Paris. I played in France for 2 years. I played in Italy for four. You know, Croatia for half a year, Australia. Basketball, man, afforded me the opportunity to travel the world. And I wouldn't regret it at all. I kind of wish early on in those years that I would have kind of embraced being in Europe a little bit more. You know, I was over there just to play ball and get back. You know,
right.
I wasn't engaging in the community. I wasn't seeing what was out and about in those some of those countries.
Mm-hmm.
I just was, again, like I said, there, do my job and get back.
Okay.
Then later on, whenever, because I still had kind of NBA dreams, you know, I still had to come over here, rock and roll for a little bit and maybe get a shot to the league.
Right.
Once that didn't happen, again, I started to enjoy the country for what they had to offer outside of basketball as well.
Right. Yeah, definitely, man. Like I said, I'm, like you said, my first couple of years overseas, it was more so like, I'm in and out. I'm gonna come over here, do my job, get this money, and I'm gone. But it wasn't until like I was in Turkey and my coach and my players, they forced me.
Yep.
Oh man, let's go for a walk around the city. I'm like, man, dude, we got practice. I'm trying to go back to the room and relax for a little
bit. Got those tour days.
We just got here and you want to go for a walk. And you know we got practice. I want to go back and take a nap. Oh man, let's walk around the city and enjoy, man. And let me show you around. Let's go tour. And I'm like, man. But what did you say as you got older? Man, basketball. This is all through the game of basketball we got able to travel the world. I still got friends that's like family over there.
Yep.
In these countries, to experience, to learn these different cultures, learn these different languages, actually live in inside this the tradition of these countries that we were in. And I tell players all the time now, and I say, man, look, you know, yeah, everybody wants to play here in the NBA. I mean, that's always the childhood dream, which is nothing wrong with that. And that's all great. But man, I know I used to knock it at first, but now I'm like, man, I love living overseas. I really loved it. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the journey. I enjoyed meeting different, even some of the countries that was not so good, you know, the countries that was not the greatest to live in, but I appreciate that because it was an experience,
yeah.
You know, and you played, I know I went to Croatia, me and Chris McCrae went over there me and Chris McCray went over there with a travel team, and we experienced Croatia. So we played against some teams over there. And then I think was you in Italy when we went over there in 2004? We went over to 2004 after we won the ACC tournament. We went over there to play against some eight teams.
I remember you guys coming to Europe when I was still playing pro ball, but I can't remember right offhand where I was in 2004. I did play in Turkey 1 year as well. I played in Beşiktaş.
Okay.
That was awesome too. You're talking about environments. You're talking about crowds and arenas.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that was definitely next level as well. Right now we're going through with, you know, fans are being back in the arenas and stuff like that. They popcorn on, you know, Russell Westbrook was all unfortunate.
Right.
Spit on Trae Young there,
yeah,
which was unfortunate. Man, playing in Europe, I'm sitting there looking like, dude, like,
all that's right, nothing.
Don't get me
that's
wrong. The fans here are totally out of pocket.
But, right.
Man, listen, quarters and batteries didn't whiz past my face. And don't get started about, you know, the liquids and water bottles, stuff like that. So, again, not saying it's different.
Right.
And it forces you to focus on task at hand. Let's come in here, or, you know, go out here, do our job, and then get up out of here.
Right. And like you said, man, I done, you know, Greece, playing over in Greece with the Panathinaikos and the Olympiacos games, and, you know, going to Turkey, like you said, with those big games, those rival games, man, how the fans, the gym is smoky.
Yeah.
The fires are lit.
Yeah,
people are like, oh, man, they don't pop. Like you said, it's very unfortunate. I hope they get a handle on that, but. Man, they was doing that overseas. They still doing that overseas. They banned the fans from games for like games or years because how crazy it be. You know, whatever. I mean, whether I'm in South America, whether I'm in Europe, even over in the Middle East, you know, you have those rival games where it's like, man, a fight can break out. You know, all type of things can happen because of the love and the passion these fans have for their teams. Like they're really, literally, diehard fans. Like literally, they see you on the street. And you had a bad game and they lost against a rival team, it's gonna be a problem.
that's you know what's funny you mentioned that. That's I played in my first couple of years in overseas when they give you the company car. Mm-hmm. They'll have all these stickers all over it. They'll have the, you know, sometimes they even have your face or your name on your car.
Right, right.
I get it, sponsorship and everything like that, but because of situations I heard before that about, like you said, bad games or, you know, whatever. You driving that car going to the grocery store, or you driving that car around the city, and you didn't have a bad game the day before. You might get a busted window, busted tire, or you might get somebody just want to stop and talk to you. I always told myself, man, do me a favor, like give me the car with as minimal, if none at all. And I always would say this because a lot of times the cars would be sticks, and I knew how to drive a stick, but I said, you know what, I don't know how to drive a stick. Y'all gotta give me something. And
something
then they'll
different.
Get me a car that's, you know, don't have no stickers on it, nothing like that. That will save me just in case something go crazy or I don't have a good game or something on if they want to notify me.
Right.
You can't notice me out and about.
Nah, absolutely, man. It's like you said, man, it's you had experiences, the good, the bad, the ugly. You know, I tell people all the time, like, man, you were lucky. Say, look here, man, you gotta understand, we're over in a different country. Sometimes don't even speak that language. Away from my family, we got to go over there and put in work every day because they expect the Americans to come over there and perform every single practice, game. Man, if you're having a bad first half, they might be calling another player by halftime.
Yep.
You might be bad after the game. You might be getting shipped off. So, yeah, it's sweet. It's a good life, you know, tax-free money, get the house. That's all good and glamorous. But look here, we go through a lot more than you think, you know, so.
But you know what's funny about that, Trav? Also, again, later on as I was over there and matured a little bit, I appreciate going out into the culture a little bit more. It taught me how to think differently. It taught me how to listen differently. You know, like I said before that, East Baltimore kid, I went right down the street to college. I had the same group of friends, you know, family members stuck tight with me. Going over to Europe early on, again, I was there to do my job and go back. But once I started really, you know, engaging with my teammates and their family, going out in the city, seeing museums, things of that nature, taught me how to and experience different cultures, taught me how to learn and listen differently. And I like that now because particularly over the past couple of years, everything that's going on, with the social injustice, with the Black Lives Matter movement and things of that nature, people weighing their opinions and options and their decisions on different topics. I listen more attentively now, because of the fact that I understand that people are different.
Right.
People have different experiences. People have different, cultures and things about it. Mm-hmm. But when certain issues hit home, it behooves you to have what you understand, know what you understand about it, but also have a listening ear for someone else's opinion. And you can agree to disagree, or you can, find a way to move on from it. But for me, being in Europe like that helped me out a whole lot without me knowing it. But later on, working out in the community, with things that's been going on most recently, just take time, be patient, and listen to people a little bit.
Right. No, absolutely, man. And one of the main things you said was going to these other countries and seeing how they living, and how they go about doing things, and maybe you come back home and appreciate things a lot more. Or they go over there and they live in a certain way, like they say, oh, like, why is it so different back at our place? You know what I mean? Or, why are things are just different? You know, so like you said, it opens your eyes up to like either appreciate your situation a lot more, be grateful for your situation a lot more. I tell my kids all the time, like, man, look, I done been to South America where they don't have little to nothing, but they having the best time in their life. They really don't have nothing. I mean, some of these countries, it's like, why are you tripping off money? I mean, I'm like, look at man, I got family, man. I need my bills paid. I used to go to, like, we get late on our money. I'm like, look, there's a situation. We got a problem here.
Man, listen.
I'm like, man, what? The man said, look, in shop now. I need my money now. I need my money right now.
I'm telling you, man, I was lucky, fortunate enough to have an OG over there, a guy named Kenny Barlow, my very first year in France. I mean, Italy helped me out big time. Because again, that was around the year, like I said, early on in my career, I was there to do a job and get out. He was on the end of his career, a couple years left from playing. So he taught me the ropes about it a little bit, about how, you definitely got to, pay attention to what's going on the court and off the court. Mm-hmm. And all I cared about was telling people how to cook my food, knowing where the bank was and knowing where the airport was. That's all I really cared about.
Right.
To a point where, like, this was, before the euro, and it was Italian currency and American currency and the U.S. dollar. Long story short, my numbers weren't adding up right. Team was paying me in Italian money, and it wasn't adding up to the U.S. dollar that we agreed to. And he helped me out with that. And I never forget the first time I really spoke up for myself, like, went to GM office. I said, listen, I need to bring one of the Italian players in to speak English. I listen, you need to translate for me.
Right.
This is what we agreed on. This is what I've been getting for the past couple months. This ain't right.
Right.
Look at the paper like, oh, Elio, you know what? You're right. I didn't understand. Let me tell me, I had to point this out to you. You didn't know what was going on?
They definitely knew what was going on. They definitely knew what was going on. You know,
I might have been born at night, but it wasn't last night.
They knew it was going on. This is one of the series going to catch it. We didn't catch it.
Got one.
Because like I know some guys used to get paid in Euro, this is back when it wasn't the same amount of money. So like, if I want to get paid in euros, I'm getting more because
getting
euros
more
than the dollar. Until they caught on, they're like, hold up.
Right.
And then they say, okay, well, if you want in euros, I'm gonna give you the same amount as for me in dollars. But back then, guys like, y'all want to get paid in euros.
Yeah.
They just smile like, dang, man. And so they caught on to it. But anyway, but like you said, man, just that experience, man, it's a great thing, man, and we were fortunate enough to experience it, and now I'm able to kind of teach the younger players and the young guys coming behind us about what to watch out for, to look out for. What was your favorite country you played in? What was your favorite country that you played in?
Oh man, favorite country I played in probably was Italy. I had a chance to play there 3 years consecutively, then I went away and I came back a couple years later for a fourth year. So. Reason why I say it is because out of all the places I played and the languages I learned, that probably was the most that I knew. I don't know any of it now. I mean, a word or two here and there out of practice. Because the competition was great. My first year overseas in Italy, I didn't know Ginobili was going to be that guy that he wound up being. Played against him in Italy every year. So a lot of young Italian players, the competition was great. The food and the culture was amazing. Like, I can go to a mom and pop restaurant in a small city in Italy and get some of the freshest pasta, some of the best pizza. Wasn't a big drinker back then, but you
Right.
know, wines, things of that nature.
Right.
Fashion was unbelievable. I played in a city called Livorno, which is about an hour at the most away from Florence. So on our off days, or you know, a couple of days off, I would go to Florence for the weekend. And in Florence, everything you need, the fashion, you got culture, things of that nature. And you know, the weather was awesome. Lived on both coasts over there. So, and a lot of guys came over there after I played, and you know, to go down to Naples and play against a guy I competed with against AAU or competed against in college was always cool when you go and see some of the guys that made the same decision you did to go overseas and play ball and make some money. So, all Italy was fantastic.
Yeah, we had a good time in Italy as well, man. You know, we were still in college, but we had a real good time, you know, experienced that life. And like you said, that food, man, we had like 5-course meals every day. I'm talking about, but time was time to leave, we said, I'm not eating no more pasta for a few months, man. We used to get
Right.
pasta and chicken every single day. Like, I'm not eating pasta no more, man. Like, that's all they eat, but it was good, though. It was a good experience, man. I love Italy. Italy was dope, man. So what are you up to now? I mean, what are you up to now? What you got going on now?
Like I mentioned to you, Travis, you know, first day was supposed to be back in the office today. Right now I am a community engagement specialist for a research infrastructure downtown Baltimore called the Patience Program. Long story short, I'm the guy, I work with the team that connects the researchers with a lot of connect the researchers to the community members in the community and give them advice on how to participate in research. So something I've been doing for about 2 years now. Again, like I said, with COVID and everything, it kind of took a shot to it because a lot of my job was in and out of the office. I was in and out of communities, you know, East Baltimore, West Baltimore, dealing with a lot of senior programs. And COVID, we had to stop that. It came to a halt. We found ways to still navigate on this platform we're using right now with Zoom, but for the most part, that's what I've been doing right now. I was doing a little coaching when I left Maryland. Oh, when I kept not left Maryland, when I finished playing ball with a prep school here in Baltimore called Mount Zion Prep. I dib and dab
No,
a
my son.
little bit, helping out so to speak, but no more of that for right now.
Okay. Now look here, man. You know, I'm not gonna hold too much of your time. I definitely appreciate you. Hey, bro, I remember you came down and you spoke to us. I don't know if it was right before we went to Italy. I know you came down
You know what?
and it was right before, I think it was right before we went to Italy. I think it was practice. I remember like it was yesterday.
That's exactly what it was.
We was practicing in the gym upstairs. I remember like
Upstairs.
this, and I think you practiced with us, or you came in to speak to. I know you practiced with us one time, but you also came and spoke to us. And I remember these things, man, because I appreciate these moments and guys that, even though a lot of times I didn't listen to the guys' advice when they're trying to tell me to do things, but I appreciate it now. Even then, you know, just to ask questions, and you guys are always helpful. And like I said, I remember when you came up and you spoke to us, I think right before we went to Italy,
I
right
think that's what it
before we
was.
went.
I think G-Dub knew that I played in Italy for a while and you guys had that trip set up. He wanted me to come in and drop a little jewel and everything. And that's exactly what it was. I wasn't there that year, but I had played a couple years in Italy. So he wanted me to, you know, drop some dimes to you guys. And yeah, you guys were great, man. You know, I always love coming back, speaking to kids, speaking to the players. I do a couple speaking engagements here in town. I'm getting a little older now, so they don't remember Rodney Elliott. They don't remember me as much today as you would, you know. For the current Maryland guys now, but it's all that's part of it too. That's
Right,
part of it, you know.
of
You finish
course,
and stop playing. What you're doing right now, Trav, I think is great. This is a great opportunity to tap into some of the older players, former players, so to speak. But also, you know, gives you an opportunity to, you know, work on your craft or whatever's next,
Right.
you know, in line with you. So Think First is great, man. This is awesome. I peeped a couple shows out already, man. So you know, what you guys got going on, man, is awesome. Keep it up.
And I definitely appreciate that, man. And honestly, because I think I told a few people, like before I went to Maryland, I didn't really know too much about Maryland, or I didn't know the history about college basketball. So now before I went to high school, I didn't know anything about the history of college basketball. My older brothers played, but they were older than I was. And 9 times out of 10, I was outside playing with my friends or at the basketball court. So I never watched TV. We had cable, so I never watched. So I had to learn the history about college basketball within 4 years at DeMatha. Who was who? What was what? So to be able to talk to you guys now and to get more of a history of like back then and how was it and your experiences, that's super dope. You know, when the concept came to me, I was hesitant because I'm like, you know. But now I'm like, I appreciate it more because I get to talk to guys that came before me or played after me, and just to hear their stories that people may not know, and just to force to even catch up, period, because we don't always catch up all the time. It may go years before we speak, or we see each other on social media, but we may not speak or see each other in person. So it's always cool to, you know, catch up with you guys, man. And just to thank you guys for, you know, how y'all paved the way, and then even just coming back and just speaking and helping us and trying to guide us through our experiences. So I appreciate you, bro. Thank you for everything you've done for me, man. Thanks for joining the Go Terpins with Travis Garrison on the Field of 16 Networks. I appreciate you, man.
I got one more question for you, Go Trav. We both experienced G-Dub and everything down there. If you had an opportunity to go back and talk to your 18, 19-year-old self, what would you tell him?
Oh, man. Oh, man. For sure, stay out the clubs. Stay out the clubs, man. No stay clubs out. For you. Stay out the stay out the clubs and live in that gym. The two of the most important things I would tell myself, stay out the clubs and live in the gym, man. Those are the two things that kept me from helping us reach higher heights and kept me from really fulfilling what I wanted to, with the things I set out to do at Maryland and even, you know, to the NBA level. I think, you know, me not being in the gym as much and me living in the club too much. You know, so that was the two most important things. Easily, by far.
I'm gonna tell you this: we didn't have COVID back then, so there was no, you know, quarantine. So I'm from Baltimore, but I love DC. I love Dallas City. So I found a way to balance that part. As far as staying in the gym, for sure, you're right about that. Always work on your craft as much as you can. Mm-hmm. But I would say bet on myself. So, you know, I'm not sure if I said that to you guys when I spoke to you in Italy, but it's one thing I harp on right now when I talk to a lot of youth, high school guys, AAU guys, fellas, bet on yourself.
For sure. You know,
whatever that means, bet on yourself and always believe in your dreams. Always believe in what you want to do. Don't let anybody, you know, deter you from that. Do your research. Do your research. Figure out what's going on, but bet on yourself. At the end of the day, if you come up short, that's okay. That's fine. You took that chance. So that's my advice to, you know, like guys, but.
Hey, that's some great advice, man. That's definitely always better yourself, man. You know, because you live in some. If you try to fulfill somebody else's dream, then you're not gonna be happy in the day, and then you have regrets later on in life. But if you do it yourself, if you take that leap, if you take that jump yourself, then at the end of the day, you can look in the mirror and say, "Look, man, at least I gave it my all and I tried. It just didn't work out." So,
my man,
I appreciate you, big bro, man. Great. You have a great day, man. I look to catch up with you soon again, man. With all you guys, man. Thanks for your time, bro. I appreciate you,
Ronnie Yelly. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
All right, bro. Thank you.
Thanks.